Welcome to another episode of Pilot Say What, where we get to hear what pilots have to say. And today we'll be talking with Travis, which I'm really excited about because I almost forgot that you were on the podcast once before, but it's like you were like one of the early episodes and you were a student at the time. And I forgot all about it until you said something. but what's really cool is, if I'm not mistaken, right? You're a chief now, right?
Yeah, a chief. Yes, sir.
A chief. Yeah, one of the chiefs, right? So that's an a chief, an assistant chief. You've grown since the last time we've talked to you. So if you guys have been watching for that long since we started, then this is a great follow-up episode, but we're going to treat it like we don't know Travis because I still need to learn a lot of things about you. Before we get into everything and learn a little bit about your journey as a student and as a CFI and kind of becoming a little bit more knowledgeable in your craft as a pilot, I'd love for you to introduce yourself if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name's Travis Tozan. I'm an assistant chief here at Thrust Flight. This whole aviation thing's been a second career for me, so I'm sure we can dive into that a little bit later. But
absolutely.
I've been with Thrust, started working here in November of 2024, and right. been going strong since then. Started November 2023 as a student, started working 12 months later, and just been grinding it out.
Right. I'm sure it's hard to have a lot of foresight in this industry when you still are learning, but did you ever expect to become an assistant chief here at Thrust Flight?
I don't know that I had a lot of expectations with that. Whenever I first started this, I knew the end game was to be a professional pilot.
Okay.
So I just started working that problem backwards. What do I need to do to get there? You know, I got to get a medical, do a discovery flight, find the school I want to go to. And so I just kind of took it one step at a time and here we are.
Right. And kept working and this is where you ended up. Can you explain what an assistant chief is like here at Thrust Flight? I mean, I don't know how you guys have that worked out over there, but how does it serve the student population?
Yeah, absolutely. So here in Addison, we've got 40 or 50 instructors, and then we've got 5 or 6 assistant chiefs, just depending on what's going on. And some of us rotate around to different campuses just as needed, but essentially 8 to 12 CFIs will report up to an assistant chief, and then all the assistant chiefs will report to the chief pilot, and it's just a way to designate to a group of CFIs a first line of defense when they need questions, they need help with something, hey, I need help with this student, I can't do this, I got to change this reservation. So we just serve as direct support to the line staff, line CFIs, and then additionally, we each have our respective jobs where one person might be the main contact for the FISDO, one assistant chief might be working on course guides and things of that nature. So just various behind the scenes projects that are going on get divvied up to the assistant chiefs as well.
Right. That's good. And it helps you spread out some of the workload, but also be a resource to our team.
Yeah.
Because we have a good sized team going over there these days. And you guys fly a lot. I mean, are you still flying a lot?
Yeah, quite a bit. My flying hasn't fluctuated too much moving into the assistant chief role, but I do tend to come in a little early, stay late sometimes if needed to, just to get everything squeezed into one day.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. Well, you're on some of our flying videos too. So those have done well. If you guys have seen any of our videos, I mean, I don't know how many you're really in, but I think those videos have done pretty well. So that's nice. I want to ask you a little bit about what you did before you started flight training. We have a lot of people who are interested in flight training that watch this, I believe. And then there's people who are in flight training. And at the end of the day, hearing a perspective from other people is usually a little helpful if someone's been on the same journey. But my question is, what were you doing before you started flight training?
Yeah, so after high school, I went to college, didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I got the generic business degree and then ended up in commercial real estate for a short period of time.
Okay.
And then started what I'd call my career in mortgage lending and did that for the better part of 7 or 8 years before landing here. Mm-hmm. So mainly it was just in the corporate world really is the best way to put it.
I got you. There was something about that you wanted to kind of switch up?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it at first. After a while, it was like, I'm either going to spend the rest of my life flying a desk or I'm going to do what I've always wanted to do. When I was anything, I guess in the beginning, all I ever wanted to be was a pilot.
Okay.
Whenever I finished high school, I didn't really see the means of how to do that. It was either the military or at the time, it wasn't as easy to get financial aid to do it. So I didn't really I didn't have a way to do it. I probably needed to grow up a little bit and go figure some things out anyway. So I think from a timing perspective, it all worked out. And then just a few life events happened and everything kind of came to this crucible. And I was like, all right, I'm going for it.
It's a good time. Yeah, it's a good time to go for it. There's always a few kind of people that I talk to here on the podcast, I guess. There's people who always knew they wanted to. There's people who had no doubt in mind that they were going to, and then some people were like, I had no idea. But I always find it really interesting, regardless of about like what really finally pushed someone to get started. So, I mean, I don't know what it would look like for you, but I'd like to start by asking you, when did you really know you actually wanted to start when you were younger? Not start, I'm sorry. When did you really know you wanted to become a pilot when you were younger?
That's funny. So when I told my brother I was going to do this, he's like, man, some of my first memories of you are playing Flight Simulator whenever you were like 8 or 9 years old. And then just to date myself a little bit, this was Flight Simulator 98. So this was like way back. I was probably 7 years old at the time playing Flight Simulator 98. And then one of my dad's client had a small Piper aircraft, and he took me up flying for a bit, and I thought that was really cool. And then it was just kind of always in the back of my mind, but I didn't really know how to get there. Yeah. And then once I got into the mortgage business, you know, things were good with that. Working. You know, for a while I thought, you know, I'll just do that and kind of settle for it. And then some things changed there, and here we are.
Gotcha. Look, I don't know exactly what it would be like, but is there a moment at which you were like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and look up a flight school. I'm going to see about this. I'm going to – like, what kind of pushed you? What was the final thing that kind of pushed you, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, for sure. So the job I was at was coming to a point where I was going to have to train my replacement, essentially. And so I politely told them, I was like, hey, you know, I appreciate you wanting to keep me on, but I had developed this – you know, basically entire department from the ground up. And I was like, I'm not going to train my replacement. So I left that. And then I got a different job as like a project manager. And then I was just generally unhappy. I'd already been at this other company for 7 years and had worked my way up. I had literally six different positions. I started as a processor, was a team lead, went to processing manager, then moved to sales management to learn that side of the business. And then started like this new department, and then ended up as like the AVP of operations for this other department. And then after that, I was like, I don't want to start over. Like, I didn't trust this other company anymore. So I was like, 8 years in, eight years in, I was like, I don't want to do all that again. And then potentially the same thing happened. So I kind of hit that point where I was like, I'm going to do it. And then the specific moment it happened, I remember like it was yesterday, because I was like, it was a Sunday morning, and I was kind of down. I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to chill out today and order a pizza. Ordered a pizza and like some cinnamon sticks and just like gorged out. And then I was like, I felt like crap. I was like, that didn't help. So I put this weighted vest on, and I just started walking, and I went for this 10-mile walk, weighted vest walk. And then through all that, I was working these things out. I was talking to a really good friend of mine on the phone, and then I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. And then like that moment forward, like I do it. Like 2 weeks later, I quit my job, like literally uprooted my life, sold the house, like liquidated everything, and went for it.
Man, it's one of those days. I understand those kind of conversations. I want to know about what it looked like. You just said like 2 weeks later already you were making those moves?
Yeah, well, I had to figure a couple things out.
Right. But you had already gotten the ball rolling.
Yeah, I had already, at this point, like I had already actually did a Discovery flight at ATP. And then the Discovery flight was okay, but I didn't really like the vibe that I got there. Mm-hmm. So I kind of put that on pause for a little bit, looked around a little bit more, and then eventually toured here. Then after I toured here, I had to make sure that my medical and all that stuff was good. Right. And then as soon as I got that, that was kind of like, okay, now I can do this.
What were some of the blockers that were on your mind during this time? Some of the things that were like, okay, this can be expensive, I have to move, or I'm quitting a job like full time. What was kind of going through your mind? Because I asked that because a lot goes through, it has to go through your mind. How'd you overcome some of those things?
I mean, I didn't have a plan B. I was like, this is what I'm going to do. And I had figured out like these are the first three steps I have to take to get there, and kind of the rest was I'll figure it out when I get there, because there's only so much you can plan and account for whenever like pursuing something like this. So it's like, get your ducks in a row as far as like, can I legally fly, i.e. can I get a medical, like where am I going to do it at, and then how am I going to pay for it. Like, figure those three things out, and then from there it's like you just got to give it your all, and everything else kind of fell into place. And I was pretty fortunate. Like, I've got some very supportive family and friends that like I definitely couldn't have done it without. So like having a good support system is definitely important. But I think most importantly, you just got to go for it. Like, like I said, you've got a big task. Like the journey, it's a long journey, but you've got to start with the basics and then just go.
What would you say to someone who, and because I always like this conversation, I agree with what you're saying. That makes sense to me. What would you say to someone who would say, you got to think about the future, you got to think ahead, you got to, like, you know, weigh it out?
Yeah, well, Sure, but I mean,
does it contradict each other a little
yeah,
bit?
Yeah, I mean, how, like,
because I don't think that you should let it stop you.
I mean, I'm the last person that knows what's going to happen in the future, okay. right? So, like, I knew that this program was going to take me between 9 and 12 months. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I accounted for that. I knew that once I finished that, I had X amount of time to get a job.
Right.
I knew that I was going to be making significantly less money than I made before. So, like, I had to completely change my lifestyle from that perspective. Like I said, I'd sold my house. Like, I had changed a bunch of different things. Like, literally completely, like, I lit a match and burned down everything previously and like completely started over. So like, how far into the future, it's like everybody's going to have their own set of challenges. I'd say like there's going to be some similarities, but outside of that, it's like, if you know this is what you want to do, then like you can figure it out most of the time. I mean, I'm sure there's like might be some unforeseen things, but like if you're motivated enough, like you will figure it out.
Yeah. I just think that that's the truth. That's the way that has to go. I like to ask that question because people always have reasons when thinking about the future as to why they can't do something or maybe it's not a good time to do something. But if you make the effort and the changes and you know you really want to do it, then you can work it out.
You just have to shift the mindset from like problem oriented to solution oriented. Like for every problem, there's a solution. There's not a problem in life that I've encountered yet where there's not like some solution. Even though I don't see it initially or you may not see it initially, like – there is a problem. There is a solution to that problem somewhere in there.
Yeah, no matter what. Okay, so let's fast forward. You get to a point to where you're in Dallas, Texas. I don't know if you've always, where are you from?
Yeah, I'm from here. I was born in Arlington, grew up in Mansfield. Awesome. So like, I really haven't ventured too far from home.
Okay, gotcha. Well, not right now. We're in Addison, Texas at Thrust Flight. You started at Thrust Flight. What was it like on your first day?
First day, man, I felt like I didn't know. I didn't belong at first. I was like, I was like, what am I even doing here? Like, I didn't know anybody. I'm already, I would say, mostly an introverted person. So like, it took a little time for me to come out of my shell and finally meet some people. Like, it took me a good probably 3 or 4 months to like really fully come out of my shell and like start talking. And that's really important, especially with such an accelerated program, because there's a lot of stuff you got to learn. Like the flying portion is a very, very small portion of what we do here.
Mm-hmm.
And the ground it can really be daunting. And it's even more daunting if you try to tackle that by yourself. So like, you got to get a good group, like-minded folks that have the same goal and missions as you and want to, you know, pursue the same tasks so you can come together. And once I found that and I found a few friends that we all got together, like things really, like I really got the ball moving from there. But first day was, I was scared, I didn't really know what to do, but I was also really excited. I was like, I'm driving up to the airport today to instead of my old office job. I was like, I don't have a job anymore. So like, that's kind of weird. You know,
yeah, that's actually pretty cool.
I've had a job since I was 16 and here I am, you know, 31, 32 years old, no job and flight school full time. So getting back into the student mindset, I would say was weird as well.
Did you anticipate what it would be like to not work? Because I understand that always working since I was probably 16 myself, and then thinking about just not and focusing full time on something that I need to understand and learn. Or are you at all like maybe looking forward to that, or are you wondering what that was going
to
be like?
I don't know that I was looking forward to it per se. Yeah. I was looking forward to like the being the means to the end.
Okay, right, that makes sense. Okay, gotcha. You go through your private. Can you tell me? Everyone wants to know about the private rating. Can you tell me a little bit about your experience through that rating and then maybe about how long it took?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I actually, private took me longer than it should have. I made some, I would say, critical mistakes early on that ended up working out well for me because it taught me some very valuable lessons. So private pilot took me almost 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, it should take maybe 2 or 3 months here. At the time when I started in the winter, so like the weather wasn't ideal.
Okay.
My flights were in the morning, so like anytime there was clouds or anything like that, we couldn't fly. I wasn't as proactive as I should have been about getting those rescheduled or trying to figure something out. So I kind of just went with the flow, and the flow ended up taking a while. And then I get towards the end, so private pilot is broken into 3 stages here. So I got to the third stage within two and a half months. So like, I was on track at first, and then I got stuck on the stage 3 check.
Okay.
For being impulsive and for making like going in weather conditions that I shouldn't have gone in. So for example, the first one, it was rainy and windy, and it was wind conditions that I hadn't flown in before, but I was impatient. I'd been waiting for a week. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And I went, failed.
Yeah.
Got retrained, had to wait another week to do the stage check again. Cause at the time there was a backlog on stage check. So it took a little while to get through that. Right. And then same thing. Bad conditions again. And I was like, you know what? I went again.
Go for it.
Yeah. Well, guess what? It took me 3 times of doing that back and forth before I finally was like, all right, I'm going to come up with some personal memos. Like, I'm not going to go and put myself in this position anymore. So it took me 5 months to finish private. And then after private, I finished all the other ratings in 5 months.
Okay. Well, that went well. I guess you got your reps in early.
Yeah, so I'm saying it cost me time up front, but like it really, like yeah. I took those lessons to heart and moved very quickly through
that. And that's something that comes up often. People get discouraged when they have a trouble on a specific part of their light training journey. You had that at the end of your private. Can you tell me a little bit about what it was like to, like, you know, fail a stage check, and maybe explain a stage check for people who might not understand?
Yeah, absolutely. So for the accelerated program, like I said, we've got the stage checks, and then each stage check is, you know, we kind of like building block, getting you ready to take your private pilot EOC or check ride. Mm-hmm. So the first stage check will just be, hey, can you safely land the airplane, and can you do the basic maneuvers? And they don't have to be perfectly within standards. The second one gets a little bit more technical. We'll add in navigation, and we'll tighten up the standards on everything and maybe add in one or two more things. And then the third stage check is usually just a mock EOC. So it includes everything, and it's basically set for if you've passed this, then theoretically you can pass your EOC. So when people pass that, they've got a lot of confidence going into EOC knowing, hey, I've already done this once. I just have to do it again.
Right. And is that administered by is there like a main CFI that people go to? Like, how do you experience a stage check?
Yeah, so we've got instructors that are specifically checked out. They're called check instructors.
Okay.
So some of our more senior instructors will be checked out for check instructors.
Okay.
They'll usually carry a slightly lower student load, so they'll, you know, maybe half as many as a regular line instructor, and then they're supplementing that with stage checks.
Okay, gotcha. And then for the EOC, well, maybe I'll ask you to explain instead. Can you tell people what an EOC, especially if they're not familiar with examining authority?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's just like an end of course ride. And so instead of a check ride, since we've got a one approved 141 curriculum, if you go through and pass all the stage checks, I guess I should have mentioned that you have to pass stage one before you can go to stage two, stage two before you can go to stage three. Like, that's our approved syllabus from the FA. So once you get through all that, we have, you know, our end of course examination that is essentially, it covers all of the ACS requirements that a DP would administer for a check ride. And then that's administered by, instructor here who's checked out to do EOC. So like one step above a check instructor.
Okay, I get it. That makes sense. It's kind of, there's a whole system over there.
Yeah.
We've worked that out, it sounds like.
Yeah, it saves a lot of time because there's a lot fewer DPs and a lot more students. And so, you know, depending on what area you're in, you can end up, you know, I've heard horror stories of people waiting 1, 2, 3 months.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is every week or day that goes by, you're not flying, you lose proficiency.
Yeah.
Especially in the beginning as a private pilot, if you're only flying 1 time, 2 times a week, it's really hard to get good quickly. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the benefits of the accelerator program is you're coming in here, you're flying 4, 5, 6, 7 days a week, depending on weather. And then the EOC waits 2 or 3 days versus 2 or 3 months. So you're not losing all that proficiency, spending more time, money, trying to stay proficient while you wait for a DP spot to open up.
That's something I've learned through all of this is that it's a little less like riding a bike. Maybe after you've done it for a while, you can take a break and come back and it might not feel that weird, but the proficiency thing is a real thing. Can I ask you about, have you interacted with any students that came in through our Finish Line program? You familiar with that?
Yeah, I'm familiar with the Finish Line program. If I have, you know, they don't wear a badge that says Finish Line students, so it's hard for me to determine, but I have talked to quite a few who were part 61 prior to, and they came in, you know, whether they had their private and instrument done and now they're starting commercial, but the Finish Line specifically, I don't recall.
Gotcha. I was always wondered because we've had quite a few people sign up because they were having that issue with where they just want to finish up their private and then go ahead and get started with an accelerated program.
Yeah, actually, now that I think about it, I just did a cross country with a guy the other day who I guess he was Finish Line because he came in, but he did his check ride with his own airplane.
Okay.
Like, he brought his airplane here because it was a 182, so he didn't have to get proficient in the Archer before he did that, and then he had just finished the instrument. Now he was doing commercial.
That's nice. That sounds nice. Yeah. It sounds like a nice way to do it. Okay, so you move on through your ratings. I want to know, you said it took about 5 months to kind of get through the rest of them after you finally got through your private. I say finally, but, you know, it was a work in progress. Did you become a CFI right away with this?
Yeah, once I started here, I didn't stop.
Yeah, gotcha. Can you tell me a little bit about the experience of aiming to be get a CFI position? I mean, that's a little nerve-wracking, probably a little bit. I don't know how competitive it was at the time, but I know it is a little bit of a competitive thing.
Yeah, I mean, there was 18 to 20 people, I think, in my class when I started, and of those, maybe three or four ended up becoming CFIs, and there's only one other one that I know of that is still here. The rest have moved on. And then, like, as far as like staking out, you know, there's maybe a 20 or 30% flow through rate of student to CFI. So my advice on that is, like, you just have to stand out. You have to be known. There's a bell curve with everything. You've got below average, average, and above average. And we want the best CFIs here to teach. I mean, this is it's a demanding job, but it's also rewarding. And you've got, you know, $500,000 airplane in somebody else's life. So, like, we take this stuff very seriously. And then, like I said, you've got to be known.
Right.
There's a campus here. We've got study halls. People get together studying all the time.
Yeah.
By the time you get through the program, you know, there's two or three stage checks for each rating. You know, you're doing five or six ratings. So by the end of it, you've done nearly 20 stage checks, multiple EOCs. So there's a really good chance that the people that are in charge of doing the hiring have flown with you.
Right.
So we often tell folks on orientation day one, like, your interview starts today. Like, you know, the end of it, your hour to interview to become a CFI at the end, like, we've already have a really good picture painted of who you are, like, what your character looks like, what your safety record looks like, what your flight record looks like,
right?
All of that.
And did you, when it came time to start thinking about getting a job, either as a CFI or however, to, you know, stay proficient, make money, and to build hours, did it ever cross your mind on what you might have to do if you didn't land a position with Thrust?
Yeah, it crossed my mind. I didn't like the alternative because it was going to be very expensive. But
right.
I would say right after I got my private license, I joined a flight club in Denton.
Okay.
Just to, like, rent planes there leisurely and have a little fun with it. It was actually pretty enjoyable because in flight training, every flight you do, you have there's a mission to it. Like, there's a purpose. I'm doing this. I'm working on that. Like, there's not a whole lot of downtime except for maybe the cross countries, if you want to consider that
right.
some downtime. But it's very, like, mission driven. And so I rented the airplane and just went and did some leisure flights, and that kind of rejuvenated the love for flying a little bit. But as far as, like I said, plan B was, if I didn't get hired here, was going to figure out somewhere else to get hired, and then just, like, burn through, you know, money that I had, try to make money to fly on the side until I could find a job.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like to ask that because some people feel like if they don't get the job at the school that they trained at, or somewhere like Thrust, where we give everyone an interview at least, they're like, oh, it's the end of the world. Like, there's no CFI jobs out there. And I just feel like that's a tough place to be in. But also, I mean, I would hope that.
I feel like the same could be said for any industry. I mean, anywhere you go, there could be times where it could be tough. You may have to move 30 minutes away. You may have to move 3 hours away. Like, it's very dependent on geography and demand for what's going on. So, like, a lot of the people I know that didn't get hired here had, I wouldn't say no trouble, but they found other jobs relatively quickly. Like, I keep up with some of them. We're, you know, connected on Instagram or whatever. And I see them finding jobs, like I said. There's very, I say few, I don't keep up with everyone, but I said, the people that I remember, like, they find jobs.
Right.
And again, if you're motivated enough, like, they're out there for sure.
I feel like that has to be a part of the way that you're thinking when you start this, though. All right. Like, it's not a, I don't know. It's really easy, especially when you're younger, but it's also easy when you have your, like, eye on the prize, you want to be in a rush. I guess my point is I want to know what kind of mindset you had going into it, and if it changed as you got into the journey a little bit more. Because you kind of have to expect that this is a long journey, that you're going to have to figure it out as you go.
Yeah. Well, the mindset in the beginning is, like, how do I be the best at this? Like, you're always going to be learning stuff. So from, you know, like I said, it took me a while to, like, kind of find my groove and start getting with people. And that's when the ball started moving. So mindset is, like, I need to have an open mind. I need to make some friends. I need to make some connections. This this industry is a lot of who you know as well. So, like, getting involved and going to conferences, and there's various different things you can do to start getting your name out there. Because there's a lot of pilots, but it's still considered a pretty tight-knit community.
Right.
So, like, but like I said, my mindset coming into it was, I know this is what I want to do. And then having some background in the leadership roles at my previous job and kind of, you know, grinding a corporate ladder before, I had a pretty good idea of what people wanted and how to stick out. And one is, people have to know your name. They have to know that you're going to go the extra mile. Like, not, my job is not in my vocabulary. Like, I'll help out with anything I can within the realm of possibility for the most part. And then, you know, I remember one of our old operations guys, he was like, anytime something came up or a slot open, and, you know, I would be the first person he called because he knew that I would be there in 5 minutes to hop in and get things done.
Right. You started that off with, I just kind of want to be my best, or I want to be the best pilot I can. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you mean by you want to be the best pilot you can? Because I think it's an important mindset to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't start with showing up here and hopping in an airplane, right? Okay. Like, I've got a pretty strict routine as far as, like, it goes with eating, sleeping, working out. Like, mm-hmm. If you're tired, you're not going to perform well. So if you're not going to bed on time and you're getting 3-4 mm-hmm. hours of sleep, especially me, I'm a little bit older. If I don't get 7-8 hours of sleep, like, I'm dragging the next day. So, like,
right.
I got to prioritize that. Got to prioritize food, like working out, things that are going to keep me sharp mentally.
Right.
Like, people kind of give me a hard time because I always eat the same thing every single day. Like
chicken and rice or something?
No, beef and rice.
Okay, beef and rice.
I've got it in the fridge. Close. Like, what are we having today? I was like, you're super surprised, but more beef and rice. So,
yeah.
You know, I think it's like being the best version of yourself is really important. Whatever that may look like for each individual. Like, I've kind of figured out what it looks like for me, and it will change over time. Obviously, it's not going to be perfect. Right. For every day, but like I said, like, being the best version of myself allowed me to be the best version. And I still make mistakes today, obviously, so it's like, mm-hmm. again, the goal here is not perfection. And I remember some of my check rides, I've even been told by DPs, they're like, we're not looking for perfection here.
Right.
There's no such thing as a perfect flight or a perfect ground. Looking for competence, safety, like, you know what you're talking about. If you don't know the answer, can you find the answer? Mm-hmm. Like, all these things are really important. So kind of identifying some of those hazardous attitudes that I had, working on those. Like I said, I figured that some of those out in private pilot, like the impulsivity and the macho, like,
you gotta
figure out like where your weak points are and then start working on it.
That makes sense. And everyone does have their own weak points. And I think that's, it's cool that that's actually part of the training to, you said, hazardous behaviors. Like, that's something you'll talk about, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Hazardous attitudes.
Can you tell me, just so that, I'm out of curiosity, what kind of hazardous behaviors do you guys talk about?
Yeah, so you've got macho, mm-hmm. You've got anti-authority, resignation, impulsivity, to name a few.
Okay.
And like, I hit all of those coming through training.
It's weird how it's almost like a little shadow work. Like to use a word like that, but you kind of have to figure things out about yourself in order to do this. But it's because it's challenging, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Was there a time when you kind of had to, like, can you tell me a little bit about what it was like to correct yourself in that moment, though, when you start seeing your own little hazardous behaviors? Like, what did you have to do to fix that? That's not easy.
Well, fail. Yeah, I mean, really. Like, I had to fail the stage check 3 times before. Like, I can be pretty stubborn, obviously. So that happened to me 3 times before I finally got through to my thick skull. And then I use that as an opportunity now. So, like, all my students now, I make sure we're doing our personal minimums at the beginning of the rating and at the end. It's like, hey, we're going to sit down and talk about, like, what you're comfortable flying in.
Right.
And that's the number. So what the day of stage check or check ride comes, we take all the emotion out of it. We look at this piece of paper. Is it within your standards here? If yes, go. If not, don't. Like, it can be that simple.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, we're going to make sure those standards and personal minimums are appropriate to the rating being sought. And it's not like, okay, if the winds aren't calm, I'm not going. Like, that's not the purpose of it. It's to, like, hey, if it's a 12 knot crosswind, are you comfortable landing the airplane safely in that? If they're like, I don't know, I haven't done that before, then okay, well, we probably shouldn't do that on the day of the check ride.
Right. It's kind of like clarifying your judgment ahead of time,
setting
a standard for yourself, that sort of thing. And I guess that's what I'm hearing from you when I hear you talking, because you even mentioned earlier, maybe growing up a little bit, maybe waiting a little longer to have gotten started probably benefited you a little bit. Is there anything, let's say that, you know, younger Travis is starting flight training way before you ever did. What would you say to that younger Travis?
Oh, man, I would say show up.
Yeah,
because when I went to college, like, I went to school on test days.
Yeah,
and but I wasn't very interested in it either. So it was like, I did the bare minimum to get by, and you know, I regret that now, because, you know, obviously I didn't have the best GPA, and, you know, I spent a lot of money to do that. But
you know,
I got the piece of paper at the end of the day, so I guess that counts for something. But outside of that, I would just say, you know, if you're gonna do something, you know, one of my favorite sayings: anything worth doing is overdoing. So if you're going to do something, like, make sure that you're putting in 100% effort. And if you're not going to, then, hey, have a hard conversation with yourself. Why am I doing this? What's the purpose of why I'm doing this? And then if you can't answer that question, I think, again, you should probably stop doing that and do whatever it is that you want to do.
It's part of life too to kind of get those kind of answers from yourself. You finished college and then you went on with your career and then you changed careers. For someone who wants to kind of think about the experience of college versus flight training, what would you say to them?
I think it's kind of close. It's just a lot faster and more multifaceted, I would say. I guess depending on what your degree is, but here, you know, once you start a rating, you're in ground school for a couple hours a day, and then you're also preparing to take a written test. So you got to study on your own to do that. And you've also got either simulator training or flight training. So your day is structured and organized in a way where you're fighting on a lot of fronts per se. And I think from a college perspective, that's similar, but you know, again, we're just adding in more of an element of you're just not going into a class, sitting there, going home, studying, and then coming up and taking a test. Like, you're still taking tests here, but all the tests are multifaceted. Like, for each stage check, there's a ground portion where you got to pass the oral, and then there's also the flight portion, and you have to pass the flight. So I would say in that respect, it's different where your more skills are being involved, I guess, pertaining to, depends on what your career would have been in college.
In a lot of scenarios, I hear that though, and I guess I like to ask that because I like to hear how people put it. You said you weren't very interested and maybe didn't show up at your best, but here you are. Do you attribute that to mostly like just where you were in life, or do you think that there's things you learned about how you wanted to approach things in general? You know what I mean?
Yeah, a little bit of everything. I mean, I grew up a lot, obviously, over the course of 10 or 12 years, so that helped. And then again, I have a short attention span, so if I'm not interested, like I'm out pretty quick. So I had to be really interested, and the ground portion was still tough for me because I mean, there's not very many people that love studying and reading books, and some of the textbooks are pretty dry. So finding a way to just carve out time and be. For me, it was like, all right, I got to spend 30 minutes at a time reading, and I'm going to take a break. And then 30 minutes, I'm just going to tackle this until I get it done. Or even when it came to taking my writtens, I was like, I'm going to schedule my written for this day 2 weeks from now. Clock starts. I got to do it. And then I would just devote, set aside, you know, 2 hours a day or whatever I thought it would take to pass it, and then go from there.
Did you ever apply any of those types of thoughts or techniques when you were in college?
No.
I asked that because I mean I went to college for a little while. That's it though. But I think I would do much better these days. But I just started working, and I asked that because I think there's a lot of people who feel that way. They don't. They're going to college. Some people are going to college just to get a piece of paper. And I don't know. I think I'm a believer that from talking to you guys that this is like a craft. And like you said earlier, you want to be the best at it. That this is something you can have that mentality about a lot easier without faking it, I guess.
Definitely.
I guess I just there's more to apply it to. Do you feel like you're able to apply the things you learn on the ground in the plane?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, right. That's kind of
Yeah,
the part of
yeah.
it.
I mean, the plane is a terrible place to teach somebody like the various aerodynamics and like why we do a maneuver and like all the things that happen with that. So, you know, typically like when you first start here as a private pilot, you're not in the plane on day one. You start in the ground. We'll put you in the simulator for 4 or 5 sessions, you know, 3, 4, 5 sessions depending, and then from there you'll do a sim checkout. And then we bring you into the plane. So like a very building block, like we're going to teach you this first and then this, and then like we're just going to keep moving up the ladder.
I want to zoom out a little bit. I feel like I'm understanding like, you know, some of your journey so far. I still haven't really talked about what it's like to have like worked as a CFI and you know, how to adjust to that and some of your responsibilities. But before then, I still want to ask, I feel like I kind of understand how you're working, right? You seem disciplined to me, but I still want to understand why, like what kind of, do you have like a motive? What is there not a time when you're like, man, this is a hard day and I'm really not feeling like doing it? And what goes through your head on a day like that if you have those days? Do you have a day like
Yeah,
that?
I do, and I'm like, my worst day here is better than my best day at my old job is like probably the easiest way for me to sell it. And then, you know, even now, like it can still be daunting sometimes when you're tired or having a bad day, but you know, look outside and it's like I'm still flying planes. My view's the sky, and even on days where I'm not flying, it's raining or whatever, it's like that's just part of it. Life's not all sunshine and rainbows, so just appreciating and being thankful for the opportunity to do it is what really keeps me going on that. And then obviously knowing like at the end of the day, my mission is to become a professional pilot. This is the necessary stepping stone to get there. So just trying to enjoy that and make the best of it while I can, and then give back a little bit. Like I've had some really great mentors here. I had some really great instructors. So I strive to be a good instructor for my students as well, so that they can be successful here. Like I don't want you to be an average pilot. Like, my goal is for you to be above average. My goal is for you to get hired here and mm-hmm. achieve your goals. So mm-hmm. tell my students, like, anything I can do to help you get that, like, that's it. Like, however much effort you give me, like, I'm going to give you that same amount of effort.
Would you say, what would you, that makes me want to ask then, what's your favorite part about what you're doing now for work and what you're doing every day by coming in and flying? Can you tell me a little bit about the parts where you feel a bit of gratitude without having to remind yourself?
Yeah, so I actually, the example, this just happened this week. I was flying with a lady. She was getting ready to solo, and she had a couple days where the landings weren't perfect and didn't feel super confident. So I went and flew with her for a couple days in a row, and she went and soloed and did her solo either yesterday or 2 days ago. And like, she sent me a message thanking me, and I was like, I'm so proud of you. That's awesome. And like, yeah. It's a big step to go from being with an instructor to soloing for the first time. Mm-hmm. There can be a lot of anxiety with that and just pressure. And it's like, oh my God, what if something bad happens? And,
absolutely.
You know, so you've got to build up their confidence and then like really see, hey, I know you've shown me that you can do this. So like, I'm comfortable allowing you to do this. So now you just got to go do it. So that's one of the most rewarding things that's happened recently, was kind of seeing that come to fruition and then watching her succeed. And then just in general, yeah, I don't know where I was going with that.
No, I got you. Yeah, you're just, I can imagine it's nice to see that light bulb go off.
Yeah.
Can you give a little perspective about the solo real quick? Maybe even your solo, I don't know. But people do solos really early in their training, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can solo in as little as 10 or 15 hours.
Yeah, it sounds wild to me. I still haven't, you know, flown the plane by myself, obviously. I'm not in training, but I've been up there a couple times, and I still can't imagine doing that. So
yeah, cool. I remember my solo, it was surreal. It took off, and I told myself out loud, I was like, you got to get it back down. So just
fight or flight.
Yeah. So we're just going to, you know, they say in a stressful situation, you default down to the highest level of your training. Like, you don't magically become a better pilot. So it's like, these are very specific things we're going to train you on and teach you on. And hey, if this happens, this is what you do. Like, these are the possible emergencies that could happen. If you need help, like, we're right here. We can, mm-hmm. you know, you're always talking to somebody, right? Whether it's Tower or somebody else. So there's resources available if something happens. But the biggest part is just like the nerves with landing the airplane by themselves for the first time.
I think that's interesting, though, knowing that, you know, they've done it, but by that time they've already done it. They've landed a plane. They just had someone in the plane with them, right? And you in that scenario as well. Were you a little more nervous without someone in the plane than when they were? Of course.
Was I?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Is that not an interesting thing that you've done it before, but you're still just a little nervous because you're by yourself, right?
Yeah. Well, because even now, there's still things that happen to me for the first time that haven't happened before. So it's like, okay, well, when this happens, what do I do? And I mean, you know, we call it ADM, aeronautical decision making. Like, that's going to keep developing over time. That's not something that on day one we say, hey, here's ADM, and then you understand it. Like, every flight hour, every ground hour is to help develop that ADM and make you a better pilot.
No one's talked about ADM yet for me on the show anyways, or on the podcast. But it sounds like comprehension in a way. It sounds like the word, it's kind of like you're just describing a comprehension of flying in general. It's always going to grow. I guess that's why I always like to talk about it like a craft. Is there something else you did before, you know, flying that was sort of something that was really skill-based that you were really into?
Skill-based? I don't know. I don't think so.
No,
I
mean, did you play sports in high school or anything
I
like
didn't,
that?
No. Yeah. I was small. I was like, I was 5 foot tall, 100 pounds soaking wet until I was 16 years old. So I tried football in seventh grade, got absolutely crushed.
Yeah.
didn't grow any seventh, eighth grade. So I was like, all right, I'm hanging that up. So I didn't play any sports. So like skill based, I mean, I'm trying to think, but no, not really.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I like to ask that because sometimes someone will, like, maybe they were into cars or like basketball or something, but
I did build computers when I was in like high school, college, but I guess that was
that. No, I mean, I could ask you about that. I could ask you, like, don't you feel like that was for you, because you were probably interested in it? Don't you feel like that was like a rabbit hole that could go forever?
Oh yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Right,
that, in very that expensive world, hobby though.
Very expensive hobby.
Not as expensive as aviation, I guess, but.
No, yeah, aviation is pretty expensive, but you look forward to making some money in aviation. So, do you feel like you'll ever be done learning as a pilot?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, gotcha. Even as an airline pilot?
No, I mean, because there's always going to be the rules change. Sometimes the airplanes you're going to be flying change. Mm-hmm. The routes could change. I mean, like I said, I lose interest rather, I wouldn't say rather quickly, but like, I like to be challenged. So like, my goal is to like continuously move on, fly bigger airplanes. Mm-hmm. You know, my goal is to get with the company, stay with them, because With the last company I was with them for almost 7 or 8 years. I moved up with them and I enjoyed that. So like, I'm loyal to a fault. So it's like, now it's like, give me a shot. I'm going to stay with you. And like, I want to start small and I want to build that up. So I'm going to start flying small jets and then ultimately like get to like as big as they'll let me fly. Like that's the goal.
Right. And so that makes me want to ask even more about your CFI and your goals and things like that. So right before that, I want to know one more time, because you talked about college and how maybe that wasn't you feel like you've grown and matured since then a lot. Would you have described yourself as disciplined in any area in that at that point in your life, or was it just college?
Yeah, no, I was, because I was working full time in college. So like I've had a job since I was 16, and I kind of, after I turned, I guess 18 and 19, started paying my own way. My dad was really good about teaching me like the value of a dollar and financial responsibility. And when I went out on my own, he's like, hey, if you do this, it's on you. So like, make sure that it's like, right now you kind of got a free ride, but once you leave here, you know, you're not on your own, but you know, he
helped me. More responsibility.
He's helped me out a lot throughout my whole life. So I appreciate that. But he's also been like, hey, like, this is your responsibility. So like, make sure like financially that you can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I asked that because it seems like something kind of clicked for you, and it just seemed like you were just ready to kind of take on the challenge of things. And I still don't really understand that exact click. So
I don't, for my first job ever, like I guess that initially I was money motivated. Like my first job ever was commission. So like I knew the more I sold cotton candy at the Ranger Stadium, the more cotton candy I sold, the more money I made. Then I was a bartender. So the more, like the better the service was, the more people that came in, again, the more money I made. And then when I got into mortgage, it was also the
more deals you
commission
did.
Based. So it was like, I was like, you're telling me if I close this many deals, I get paid X amount. And so I was there at 6:30 in the morning and I was one of the last people to leave. And like, that was it. So like, I had a clear goal in mind. Like I wanted to be the best at whatever I did. So whenever I got that mortgage job, like I was the number one processor, like right out of the gate,
right,
having no idea what I was doing. And then like I took over the worst team on the floor and they were the best team on the floor the following year. And then like, I just kept moving. Like once I could figure out the metrics, I knew what was being graded. I was like, this is okay.
Well, yeah.
Like I said, I've just kind of figured out like, if this is the problem, how do I reverse engineer that? Like people, I think, oftentimes take the big picture and it's like, okay, well, how do I become an airline pilot? Like, that's what I want to be. And it's like, that's a great goal, but like, there's 100 steps between now and then. So you need to figure out the first three, because like, that's like the tail end of things. So it's like, these are the first three steps. I'm on maybe step three now, CFI. And then okay, well, step four is going to be, you know, finding a job at a regional airline or a corporate pilot job. And so once I've get enough hours to do that, like I'm going to do that and then continue.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a way to not stop moving. Keep moving is, it really goes a long way.
Yeah, we need long-term goals and you need short-term goals to stay motivated. No matter what. If like your goal is to be an airline pilot, but you don't have any goals in between that, like it's going to be a lonely 4, 5, 6 years or however long it takes you to get there, right? And you might lose sight of why you're doing it in the first place.
Right, right. Okay, so when you first become a CFI, it can feel like you just learned how to fly already on your own, not on your own, but it seems like you just got there to where you can even fly the plane. Like, did you feel comfortable in stepping into that role?
Yes and no. I mean, I think, I don't know if people would be lying to you if you said this, but like, I think there is like a certain level of imposter syndrome, because like literally one day you're in the left seat and the next day you're in the right seat as the instructor. So That does take some getting used to. And I think the best way to overcome that, one, like talk to people, like talk to whoever, like new instructors we have here, we'll assign an instructor mentor and they'll chat with them. And then usually have a couple other people that are in the same boat as you, people that are just out of the fresh hiring class. They're 2 or 3 months in, talk to them about challenges they had and whatnot. But you know, one of the best things I think you can do is be over prepared in the beginning. Like, know if, my first student is going to be an instrument student or a commercial student, and this is the lesson that we're going to be teaching. Like, over prepare for that lesson. Like, you need to have the answers. And if you don't know the answer, you need to know how to get the answer, because you can't tell them the wrong things. If you don't know, you have to suck it up. Be like, hey, you know what? I don't know, but let me get back to you.
Right.
And then make sure you follow up with them and get back to them. And then outside of that is, you know, if we didn't think you could do the job, they wouldn't put you in the seat to do that job.
Yeah, it's competitive enough to be able to like really crack down on who's
Don't take a CFI that on day one and put them with a private pilot who's never flown an airplane either. Yeah. Right. So like, we start you off with an instrument or commercial student. So like, there's some level of experience there. Mm-hmm. And then even with a student, like there's crew resource management or CRM that can be involved. So like there's not one person getting too task saturated in the event, like, you know, something happens. Like there's different things in place and, you know, high level of training and safety and checklists that are in place to like keep everybody safe. So once you realize, all right, this is going to be safe and I know I can safely fly the airplane, now it's like, how do I make this lesson most effective? How do I be the best CFI while we're teaching? Like, how do I make sure that in this two and a half hour time block, I'm going to get done everything I need to get done and make them proficient enough to be able to pass whatever rating it is they're achieving.
Right. So, you know, then that means you there comes a point where you have to accept that, hey, there's going to be a learning curve here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to adjust a bit after, you know, strictly being a student and then growing into the CFI role that I might have just gotten. What would you say makes a great CFI?
You got to be adaptable, right? You can't put on the blinders and get tunnel vision and be like, all right, this is the plan and this is exactly what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. Like every day is different. So like you have to be able to adapt to whatever the situation of the day calls for.
Right.
And you have to have a good attitude. I mean, some of this stuff is like, it may sound too basic, but like you have to have a good attitude. You got to be able to adapt. There's going to be some things that you don't want to do. There's going to be some problems that come up. There's going to be some problem students, like somebody that, you know, disagrees with you or a student's giving you a hard time, like all of that. So like, you know what to expect when that comes. And then as far as, you know, what makes a good CFI is you got to be prepared. I mean, you got to know what we're doing today, get there early, figure out what's going on. If you show up 2 minutes before your reservation starts, you haven't looked at the weather and like now your whole day is you're going to be 15 minutes behind.
Right.
Like we book things out, you know, we've got 10, 20 planes, depending on what location you're at, that they're, as soon as you get back, somebody else is supposed to hop in that plane and go.
Yeah.
So if you're late, it ruins everybody else's. It can push the whole schedule back. So if the first person to show up at 5 a.m. is 15 minutes late when they get back, now everybody's 15 minutes behind. Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, be a good steward, I would say is a big one. Good attitude, positive, and then have a plan B when it comes to training. Because sometimes you'll need to, like, if we're shooting approaches for instrument today and I go to this airport and it's closed or they're not taking approaches, like I got to be able to pivot quickly and not be too far away to where now I'm wasting 30 minutes going from point A to point B to do that. So like have a plan in place is important.
And
ask questions. Let me forget. Ask lots of questions. Do not be afraid to ask questions. The only dumb question is the one you don't ask, unless you ask the same question like three times. And it's like, come on, dude. Like,
ask it differently.
What are we talking about here? Like, no, you cannot do that for the third time.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm sure that happens sometimes, right?
Yeah, sometimes.
So, well, you're in a position where you actually, you know, you're answering probably a lot of CFI's questions. And do you sit in on the interviews too?
Yeah.
So I think asking you that is really important, especially for anyone who might actually be interested in getting a CFI position, whether it be here at Thrust or not.
Yeah.
Because I mean, you're a part of that process.
Yeah.
I want to know a bit about, you know, when you started getting comfortable as a CFI. I say comfortable when you started feeling confident as a CFI. Can you tell me a little bit about what the difference was like versus when you first started as a CFI?
Yeah, I mean. So like I said previously, we start you off with one specific rating, instrument and commercial, right? Yeah. Or two specific ratings, rather.
Right.
It was one whenever I started. And, you know, you kind of master that. So you get two or three students, you figure that out. And then from there, once you get 100 hours dual given, we all consider letting you get private checked out. And so then you do that. And then kind of as that momentum gets going and you've answered and you fielded questions and you've kind of figured out what the process looks like and how the course guide works and like what the flow of, you know, getting them from start to finish looks like and getting your first student pass, like that's a really good feeling as well. It's like, all right, I've officially made a pilot now. Right. So that can be just like, you know, we're talking about soloing earlier.
Right.
After your first solo, that's typically a point where it gives a student a lot of confidence. Like, hey, I can do this on my own now.
Right.
Not that I don't need you, but it's like, hey, I can do this on my own. Yeah. So as an instructor, it's once you get that first student across the finish line, it's like, okay, like I'm not an imposter. Like, okay, so now I've got a little bit of street cred when it comes to being a CFI. And then the more students you get through, the more reps you get, the better. And then just from like a journey perspective, once you've done the ratings and once you've started with instrument and commercial and done private, you could do a CFI potentially if you have a good pass rate, and if you want to be a check instructor, then you can become a check instructor. So there's ways to like continuously grow within Thrust, or I'm sure other flight schools as well, to where you can like continuously keep learning.
Well, then was there a moment for you that made you feel like, okay, I'm, and maybe specifically then within CFI, is there a moment for you that you started to feel like, okay, I can kind of answer more questions. I feel confident doing this at this point in time. Do you, is there a moment at all that kind of
Like
clicked for you?
click for me.
I say clicked, but you know, because you weren't confident at first, and there's a moment where you are, hopefully.
I mean, I can't remember like one specific instance where I
Right.
was like, okay, I got this. 'Cause even like sometimes today I'm like, man, what if they ask me a question I don't know the answer to? Like
Okay.
it's still a possibility.
Yeah.
So like I said, I'm learning every single day. Like sometimes I still feel like there's people I know for sure that are way better on the ground than me, and people that I'm maybe better on the ground at, and like
Yeah.
same goes for flying. So I'd say it's all just a journey. Like I don't know that it's ever clicked. Like sometimes it still seems kind of weird that 2 years ago I didn't know how to fly an airplane and now I'm teaching people how to do it.
Exactly. Since you are in the position you are, what are some of the things that people come to you with questions and concerns? What do you feel like people look to you the most for? Because I'm sure everyone has their strengths. And what would you think people think your strength is?
I guess something that I've kind of adopted is taking on some students that weren't doing so well or like are having trouble with like a specific problem, whether it be doing DME arcs for instrument or landings or
Right.
whatever it may be. So I enjoy taking on students that are not progressing as quickly as they want to be
Yeah.
and getting them to the finish line. So like I've had pretty good success doing that, so I'd like to think I'm pretty good at it. So I
That's
guess that
good.
would probably be one thing that is like, if somebody's like, hey, I'm having trouble with this student, what do I do? And like,
Yeah.
hey, try this, and if that doesn't work, let me have a go at him. And I do that on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah, you get to have that light bulb moment, it sounds like. Is there something you like training the most on, or is there something that you like kind of helping people correct the most?
My favorite rating to teach was probably instrument.
Okay.
And then that was whenever I started feeling like a real pilot, because you're talking like a pilot. Private pilot and commercial, you're flying and doing maneuvers and that's cool, but
Gut
talking to
feeling.
ATC and shooting approaches, that's when it kind of felt real for me. So that was my favorite one as far as that goes. So I really enjoy teaching that one and making sure that people understand the proper procedures. And like at the end of the day, we want you to be safe and we don't want you to break the law and lose your license. So like I think like that one's a really important one.
It sounds kind of like you're good at this. You're good at helping people understand thing like, because even earlier you were saying you kind of have to remove some of the emotion behind making the decision whether or not you're going to fly, right? And then you kind of also talk about being prepared in a way that sets you up for success. You're kind of removing variables in those moments, and I'm thinking about even an instrument. You're removing a lot of variables and sticking to some standards, it sounds like. And it seems like there's a lot to get out of that. Outside of the fact that it's just more clear, it's more like an attitude thing. Like it sounds like you like helping people understand how to remove variables in a way. Am I
Well,
making stuff up?
no,
I'm
no,
sorry.
no. It's that's
Yeah.
accurate. And I've got high standards too. So it's like
Okay.
I've had students in the past, like, didn't want to study on the ground. And I was like, I'm not your dad. I can't learn this for you. So like, there's
Yeah.
only so much I can do. Like I told you earlier, like I'll give you as much effort as you give me. So like, I've adopted that. And if you don't know how to figure the answer out, like let's have a conversation about that. But
Right.
if it's just like pure lack of effort, then like I'm gonna get on to you a little bit, and
Yeah.
make sure that like you know very clearly what the expectation is. So like that's
Yeah.
kind of like where I start is, hey, this is the expectation. If you don't know that, then there's a problem like with a specific technical problem. Like, okay, well, let's break this down from the very beginning. I think it's really easy to get lost in the sauce of like, this is what you need to do. Like, why can't you do it? And
Yeah.
okay, it's very easy, like as a CFI and a newer CFI, and I've even struggled with this, is assuming that people know as much as you know, especially like just coming out of a ground class. Something be like, well, I knew that out of the ground class. Well, they
Right.
could have had a different ground instructor, one that may or may not have been as good. It could have got overlooked by mistake. So it's like, okay, if somebody's having a problem with something, like I don't pick up where they left off. I say, all right, what are you having a problem with? They tell me, and then I'll observe first. Like I'm not gonna like come in and make assumptions about what you do or don't know. I'm gonna
Yeah.
say, okay, let's go do this. I'm just gonna watch. Then I'll watch and be like, okay, now we can have a conversation about what's missing. And then again, start from the very bottom. Like, all right, we're gonna build you up. We're gonna tell you from the beginning, like this is step A, and then we're gonna go
Yeah.
all the way through.
I feel like mistakes usually come before the mistake happens,
Yeah, and it, like
right?
the bad ones, it's usually like a series of events. It's not just like one mistake gets made and something bad
Yes.
happens. It's like five bad decisions were made, and then there was an accident
Right.
or like a failure of some type. Then it's like, very rarely it's like one small thing. It's usually like, okay, well, it was a domino effect and that's how we got here.
Right. Like when someone's landing and it's a rough landing or it's way too far along or it's, you know, you barely even made it. It's not because of something you did when landing.
Right.
It's like in the approach, right?
Yeah. And like so. One of my biggest pet peeves when people don't go around. So like when I do stage checks now, I tell them in the brief, I tell them go arounds are free. Meaning if our approach landing, you don't like it for any reason except for a power off 180 because that's simulated engine out or whatever. Go arounds are free. So like if you're high, low, slow, fast, a deer's on the runway, whatever, you don't like it, go around. You're not going to get penalized for that. A DP is not going to fail you. An EOC examiner is not going to fail you for going around on a soft field, short field, or a normal landing. They'll actually probably applaud you for not forcing the plane down. But
right.
It can be tough in that split second decision of do I go around or not? If the wind's gusting and like I get a wing drop or something like that. And if you're not trained to go around, you're not going to. So I will tell you too, in practice, you have to do this in practice. Like you don't just, for this specific example, don't just go around on stage checks. You need to do this in training as well. Because if you don't do it in training, 99% certain that you're not going to do it
right
whenever it comes time to perform.
Is being perceived as confident important in moments like that? I just wanted to ask that real quick because if I'm imagining myself, and of course I'm not a pilot, right? But I'm imagining being in a situation where I'm under pressure with a DPE or an EOC and I'm, you know, supposed to be landing the plane. I'm thinking like, man, I think I have to do a go around, but I don't want them to think that I'm not confident or whatever that might be. Is that like, that's probably what keeps people from doing the go around, right?
I don't know. I like to think not because I think that can be a dangerous mindset. At the end of the day, like you're the pilot in command. So you're responsible for the safety of everybody on this airplane. Okay. So for a commercial pilot, I like to tell them like, you know, pretend I'm just a passenger. You are the pilot transporting me from point A to point B. You know, would you do this safely if I wasn't evaluating you on if you were going to land 200 feet long or not? You know, it's like, I care more about, are you going to be a safe pilot than are you going to be within this exact specific standard, you know? Right. So I really harp on the safety aspect of that because I think a lot of bad things could be avoided if, you know, you just weren't trying to be overly confident.
Right,
you know what I mean? Like there's no badge for being macho when it comes to passing some of these. And one thing I've really appreciated about Thrust specifically is almost every person that I've done, like, you know, everybody I've done a check ride with for sure through Thrust and EOC with has set the expectation pretty well up front. Like, hey, these are the expectations. If you don't like X, Y, and Z, they'll even tell me sometimes like, hey, we'll give you the benefit of the doubt. If like the last check ride I took actually said if something went awry or whatever, he's like, I will give you the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
Unless it was like very obviously like neglect or something like that. So again, I think people get stuck in like they want to be perfect and they don't want to look like they don't know what they're doing. And I get that to an extent, but it's also like sometimes you got to get out of your own way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like I feel like I could pick your brain all day because I like to try to get you going. But I still have more questions for you, but I think we've been talking for a little while already. So risking this going on a bit too long, I think I'm going to end up cutting it around here by asking you maybe like a last question or two. And I would like to ask you if there's anyone who is thinking about starting flight training, but they just haven't yet. Mm-hmm. Maybe they were in a position somewhat to you. Like they know there was an interest there. Maybe they're in a good paying job or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe they even like their job a little bit, but they're like, is this really what I'm going to do? I don't know. Is there anything you'd say to anyone who's thinking about starting flight training?
Yeah. I mean, the only thing you can't buy is time. So what the turning point for me was I was turning, you know, I was in my early 30s. I knew that if my goal was by 35, I want to be like somewhat established at a company because that'll give me a 30-year career. I knew if I waited another 10 years, I wouldn't have got as far as I would because everything in aviation is seniority. So the longer you're at a company, the better your quality of life and the more money you're going to make. So you make more money in the last 10 years than you do the first 20. So I think my thing to say there is like you can't buy back that time. So if this is something you really want to do and you know that for a fact, then, you know, you've got the problem. Now start figuring out what the solution to that is. And I think that's going to be a little bit different for everyone. But the first thing, like absolute first thing is go get your medical. If you can't get a first class medical, then all of it's going to be for naught. And then from there, it's like, all right, find a school, figure out you're going to pay for it. And then whatever other financial situation you have, like get a piece of paper, Excel spreadsheet and put numbers to paper and say, what do I have to do to make this work? And then once you've established that, then it's all just a math problem at that point.
Right. How does, and this is probably my last one, how does someone know if this is for them?
I mean, you just know.
Like, yeah.
You just, what would you rather be doing, you know? Would you rather be doing this or doing what you're currently doing? And right. if you don't know, that's why you have the discovery flight, right? Like, if you're yeah. unsure, you're like, hey, I kind of am interested in this. Mm-hmm. No harm, no foul. Go do a discovery flight. It takes 2 hours tops, right? Yeah. You get here a little early. We pre-fly the plane with you, answer questions you have. You go up for an hour, let you fly around for a bit. And then, you know, if you like that, continue, do a tour, and then keep right. taking those steps. So right. I guess if you've never been in an airplane before, that would be my advice, is get in one yeah. and then see if you like it. And if you love it, you'll know once you get in and you're in.
And you touch the controls, yeah, you pull on the yoke, yeah, you touch know. The rudders.
But if you get in and you start getting sick and queasy and you're like, oh, I'm afraid of heights and all that, well then, okay.
Maybe.
That's not it.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Right, right. I guess the question I always like to hear someone say something like, would you regret doing it and failing, or would you regret never trying?
Right.
Which are you going to regret more? And that usually, sometimes we don't know what we want more, but we know what we don't want even
yeah.
more.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think that kind of gives a little clarity. Thank you, Travis, for yeah, joining us on this episode of Pilot Say What, where we get to hear what pilots have to say. I know maybe we'll have you back again. We didn't get to talk about some of your goals, but you know, if you're at risk of ever leaving us to go on to the next step of your career, I'm going to make sure to get you in here one more time.
Yeah, I'll be around.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks again for joining us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. See you guys on the next episode.